are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. And welcome to our preview show for the second game of the season as the 1-0 Timberwolves get ready to take on the 1-0 Hornets on Friday night at Spectrum Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. Today we're going to talk about that matchup and what you can expect to see between the two teams, as well as take a quick look ahead at the weekend and what's on deck for the Wolves as we get into the first part of next week. And then we'll close with a note on some Wolves-related rumors that ESPN's Zach Lowe mentioned earlier this week in his annual Wild Predictions column on ESPN.com. So, packed show today. Lots to cover as the Wolves will look to go 2-0 against Charlotte on Friday night. So, let's kick it off by talking Wolves-Hornets. The Wolves, of course, are coming off a 127-126 overtime victory in Brooklyn on Wednesday night behind a 36.14 rebound performance from Karl-Anthony Towns. He also had three assists, three blocks, three steals. Huge game from Towns. And then the last second miss from Kyrie Irving after some stifling defense from the Wolves, Josh Okogie. So a fantastic game on Wednesday. Game the Wolves were not favored to win, but obviously banded together after having a big first half lead, squandering it, falling behind by 8 points early in the fourth quarter and coming back to hold on in overtime. An impressive all-around performance from the Timberwolves. Charlotte, for their part, defeated the Chicago Bulls at home on Wednesday by a single point. Similar to the Wolves' win, Charlotte had a big double-digit lead in the first half, ultimately gave that lead up, squandered it. I don't believe they ever relinquished the lead, but it became a close game down the stretch in the second half, and Charlotte was able to hold on their home floor. Neither the Hornets or the Bulls are expected to have strong seasons this year. In fact, many folks think that Charlotte will be one of the worst two or three teams in the entire league, while the Bulls are kind of a little bit more up and coming with some of the players they have and the additions they made with Thaddeus Young and Tomas Satoransky and some guys that are going to just improve the Bulls' overall rotation and support some of the exciting young talent like Zach LaVine that's on that roster, Lauri Markkanen. But all that to say, the Hornets were able to hold on at home against the Bulls and come away with a 1-point victory and get their season off to a 1-0 start. So, I think most folks would have told you going into Wednesday that Friday night's game would be between a pair of 0-1 teams, but instead, two teams that are sitting at 1-0 and happy to be there. The Hornets on Wednesday were led by rookie PJ Washington, who actually shot 7 of 11 from beyond the arc and scored a team-high 27 points in that game. Washington was the Hornets' first-round pick this year and clearly is a little bit of a work in progress, but surprised everybody with just a fantastic first game in the league. So kudos to him for that game. Here's hoping he doesn't do it against the Wolves here on Friday. Other notable, notes from the box score from the Hornets game. Devontae Graham had the second most points on the team. Coming off the bench, had 23 points and 8 assists in just 27 minutes, was 7 of 9 from the floor and made 6 threes. The only other real damage done in the starting lineup was 22 points from Dwayne Bacon, although it took him 21 shots to do it, and a positively Andrew Wiggins-esque line, although I guess he did have 3 assists, which is not something that Wolves fans are used to seeing from Andrew Wiggins. And then Cody Zeller is the starting center and really the only center on the roster for the Hornets. He played 35 minutes on Wednesday, had 15 points, 12 rebounds, and shot 6 of 11 from the floor. Zeller is, we'll get more into the specific matchup, but the Wolves will have some different opportunities against the Hornets, as Zeller is a very different center than the Wolves were facing in Jarrett Allen and DeAndre Jordan, who are on the floor for the Nets in the opener on Wednesday in Brooklyn. So the Hornets had a nice win, again, held on against a team that perhaps they shouldn't have beaten. And so they will look to carry that momentum into Friday. Next up, we're going to talk pretty in depth here about the matchup itself and what you can expect to see out of the Timberwolves coming out of the opener against the Nets. But first, wanted to read a brief note from our friends at Manscaped. Manscaped is number one in men's below the belt grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. All right, let's talk matchups. Wolves Hornets on Friday. The Hornets, again, have a very different lineup, a different look to their lineup than the Nets. This isn't your Kemba Walker Hornets either. The team's big high-profile acquisition in the offseason was Terry Rozier, who was fantastic, a really good role player for some solid Celtics teams. Rozier struggled in his Hornets debut, had just 7 points, six assists, four rebounds, shot 2 of 10 from the floor, including 2 of 6 from beyond the arc, and was a team worst minus 18 in the opening game in 30 minutes. So Rozier is supposed to be the star of that team, and the Hornets stole a win without him having a great game. But they're not driven by a ball-controlling point guard like they used to be in Kemba Walker or like the Nets were on Wednesday with Kyrie Irving. But instead, there's a few dynamic wing players. Miles Bridges is an exciting player. P.J. Washington, we mentioned, is the rookie. Dwayne Bacon also scored over 20 points. Devontae Graham off the bench. So a number of kind of dynamic wing players. Nicholas Batum actually hurt himself. I believe he broke a finger in Wednesday's game, but it's considered day-to-day. Of course, it would be surprising if he played on Friday. But there are a few good wing players, and Cody Zeller is really the only big man to speak of. Marvin Williams comes off the bench now for this team. He did have 17 points, was 5 of 7 from beyond the arc in the win over the Bulls, but Marvin Williams has definitely taken a step back the last couple of years. And so the focus from the Hornets is going to be on those wing players. And that means that Karl-Anthony Towns should have every opportunity to post up at will. And against the Nets on Wednesday, Towns primarily touched the ball on the perimeter in the first half. He had a couple of opportunities for straight line drives to the rim. The Wolves ran a couple of plays to bring Towns off of screens for catch and shoot 3-point opportunities. He brought the ball up the floor and shot a three. And he had some opportunities to distribute the ball as well, and only touched the ball, by my count, one time in the post in the entire first half of the game against the Nets. In the second half, he had a few more post touches. He still made a couple threes in the second half, but scored in the post. Once DeAndre Jordan was basically off the floor for the game, and the Nets were determined to keep Towns from beating them from beyond the arc, he went in the post, scored a couple of easy baskets, drew some fouls, and then used that to his advantage with about a minute left in regulation when the Nets were going to try and push him off the block, and instead Towns just drifted out beyond the arc and caught a pass, drained a three-pointer from the corner in a key spot. So Towns' versatility is something that the Hornets are going to struggle to deal with. He should be able to score at will against Zeller in the post. Expect, if the Wolves do go in the post to Towns, the Hornets are going to double him at least, if not triple team him. Given that the Wolves shot 13 of 43, just a hair over 30% from three-point range against the Nets, and don't have a number of really dangerous three-point shooters, you can double off anyone except Robert Covington, and you'll have only a 33% chance the Wolves are going to make the shot if it's a three-pointer, basically. So expect the Hornets to double and triple team in the post and double off of anyone except for Covington if that's the route the Wolves choose to go. They may choose to approach it the same way they did against the Nets and play really from the outside in and allow Towns to facilitate on the perimeter and draw really the only plus rebounder on the Hornets away from the rim in Zeller. Zeller's a good rebounder, not a great one. But besides him, there really isn't any size or rebounding on this team. And rebounding should also be a concern, or at least it was thought to be a concern for this Wolves team. They did all right in that category against the Nets. And this is another game where they should have a real opportunity to dominate that category against this particular team that doesn't really figure to go very far in the East this season, even though they did win their first game of the year. Expect the Wolves to do a lot of the same as what they did against the Nets, but perhaps take a little more advantage down low. The Hornets, for their part, they're going to be a team that attacks the basket first and foremost. They did launch 44 threes in their win over the Bulls, they somewhat miraculously made 52% of them. There were 23 for 44 from beyond the arc. So that's not something that'll happen every day. The huge difference, the Wolves shot 30% on 43 threes. The Hornets shot 52% on 44 three-point attempts, and each team won their game by a point. I would say the Wolves had a little bit more good fortune and were able to do some other things in that game. I guess, namely, they had Karl-Anthony Towns, whereas the Hornets had to rely on making 52% of their threes just to win a game by a single point against another team that isn't likely to be a playoff team in the Chicago Bulls. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, assuming the Hornets don't shoot over 50% from three, if they don't make 23 threes again against the Wolves should have a really good opportunity to win this game. Outside of the threes, though, Charlotte is a team that does like to try and attack the basket with all those wings that I mentioned earlier. And it's going to be key for Towns to stay out of foul trouble in this game for that reason, and also because he needs to stay on the floor in order to dominate the matchup against Cody Zeller. The Hornets are going to try and get him into foul trouble by driving straight at him until Towns can go multiple games in a row, proving that he can stay out of foul trouble. Teams are going to continue to attack him. Towns led the NBA in personal fouls last year, and this is a theme we're going to continue to harp on here on Locked On Wolves until it's clear that Towns has remedied those issues when it comes to foul trouble. It's been such a problem in his career. He had 20 more personal fouls last season than the next player on that list of players in the entire league. He did finish the overtime game against Brooklyn with five, and only a couple of them were really cheap fouls. So it does, and there were actually a couple of notable situations where Towns avoided committing a foul, including an overtime against Kyrie Irving. Irving went right into him, and it's a situation where oftentimes it feels like the official's guessing and is anticipating the contact and calls a foul, even when there isn't contact. And in the slow-mo replay, it was clear that Towns was very careful, contorted his body to avoid committing a foul. It would have been his, I believe, his sixth foul at the time, at that point in the game. And this is a game where the Hornets, their only shot is to get Towns into foul trouble. And it jives with their want to drive to the basket and create contact, get to the free throw line. So Towns is going to have to be cognizant of that and do his best to stay out of foul trouble in this game, as he would any other night, but especially in this game, because if he can stay on the floor and the Wolves can make some shots early and build a big lead, this is a team that, unless they have another otherworldly shooting night like they did against Chicago, if the Wolves can jump out to an early lead, they may be able to put it away and give Towns some rest as they head into a Sunday evening game, you know, just 48 hours later in the home opener against Miami. So look for the Hornets to try and get Towns in foul trouble. Look for the Wolves to try and establish Towns in the post. And the Wolves should also be able to dominate the glass in this game and have a real opportunity to come away with a relatively easy win. Although it's hard to peg exactly which one of those wins will be easy in this league, of course. In this particular game, the Wolves have are minus five to win the game, and they were a 4-point underdog in Brooklyn and won that game in overtime, 5-point favorite at Charlotte against the Hornets. So that will be this again should be a game that the Wolves don't have a ton of trouble with, but we'll see. We'll be back, of course, with a recap of this game over the weekend here, talking about what goes down in Charlotte on Friday, and then we'll be back on Monday morning with a look at recapping the Sunday game against Miami. But before we get to that, we do want to talk a little bit about Zach Lowe of ESPN and his comments related to some potential moves that the Wolves could be looking to make during the season. Our final segment today, we're going to talk about Zach Lowe of ESPN and his comments related to potential moves the Wolves could make during the season. It was part of a hefty column that he publishes annually entitled Wild NBA Predictions. And basically, it's a rundown of crazy things that he thinks are somewhat realistic to happen over the course of the season. There were three separate mentions of the Timberwolves, a couple as listing the Timberwolves as potential suitors for veterans who could be traded. And then in one instance, the actual the point that Lowe is making is about the Timberwolves and something they might do during the season. The first note is under his sixth point, which was Lowe's predicting that the Toronto Raptors stand pat this season, at least with Kyle Lowry. Kyle Lowry just recently signed that 1-year extension that that takes him his contract through the following season. So he will not be a free agent next summer, but it also might make him a little bit easier to trade, as he's got, he will have an expiring deal then the following year, assuming he stays healthy. So Lowe mentions a few teams that could be interested, including the LA Lakers. And then he says, quote, "Don't sleep on Minnesota. The Wolves are searching for a point guard, and Gerson Rosas, the president of basketball operations, knows Lowry from their time in Houston," end quote. Lowe goes on to say that Miami makes the most sense. It might be tough to find the right deal. The Heat are probably the team that makes the most sense for Lowry. Of course, remember his prediction. The whole point of this prediction is that Lowry is not traded in season, as Toronto still figures, you know, unless something crazy happens, they're going to have a good playoff team in a weak Eastern Conference. So it's certainly far from a done deal that Lowry gets moved at all. But if he gets moved, the Wolves could be in the conversation for Lowry. And the point about Rosas is fair, although it's been several years since they were together in Houston. Lowry would figure to be a good fit as a good outside shooter. The Wolves would ideally have somebody who's a little bit of a better defender and not on the wrong side of 30. Especially, we know Rosas is very interested in finding point guards and I guess generally other stars that match Karl Anthony Towns' window, and not getting locked in on just finding older stars. That said, a star is a star, and if the Wolves can get Lowry at a decent expense, then perhaps they need to consider doing that. The second Timberwolves mention, Lowe talks about Chris Paul and the opportunity for the Thunder to potentially trade Paul somewhere, whether it's Milwaukee I guess Milwaukee's kind of the other, Detroit would be the other situation that he mentions. Although he kind of skirts past the possibility of a Chris Paul Blake Griffin duo once again. Lowe's paragraph on the Timberwolves is quote, "Minnesota seems hungry to win now, and taking on Paul could be their get out of Andrew Wiggins jail for not quite free card, but Wiggins deal only runs one season longer than Paul's, and I'd be surprised if the Wolves see that swap as being worth their while, especially if the Thunder demand a draft pick as a sweetener," end quote. So Lowe thinks that the Wolves would be interested potentially in a Paul Wiggins swap, but if the Thunder are asking for a draft pick, it's probably not worth it, as you're only shortening that burden on your salary cap by 1 year. And this is me talking now, in my opinion, Andrew Wiggins still does have that glimmer of upside left, where is it really worth it to give up a draft pick and the glimmer of possibility that Wiggins figures something out this season just to shorten the burden on your cap by 1 year, and then get Chris Paul, who's obviously himself getting up there in years for superstars and has been injured quite a bit in recent years. Personally, if I were able to do a Wiggins and Paul swap without giving up a first round pick or say Robert Covington, that's a move I make almost immediately. However, I think including the draft pick might be a little bit too far given just how hefty Paul's contract is itself. But interesting that Lowe still sees that as a possibility and something the Wolves would consider, just given how badly Rosas wants to win as soon as possible. Definitely still something to keep an eye on. If Lowe is still talking about it, it's something we should be watching for sure. The last mention is point number 26 in Lowe's column is specific to the Timberwolves. The point is entitled, "Minnesota makes at least two trades, including one involving Robert Covington, if he's healthy." I'm not going to read the whole section verbatim, but basically Lowe says the Wolves probably don't actually want to trade Covington, but he is such a good asset that unless the Wolves are winning, they could return even more than Covington is actually worth in a trade because of how team friendly his contract is and how big of a difference maker he is as a 3-and-D player. And so Lowe goes on to mention a few different teams who'd be interested, including Utah, Portland, Houston, Denver, both the Clippers and the Lakers. And the possibility of Covington and other assets for D'Angelo Russell once Russell's eligible to be traded after December 15th as a possibility. And then Lowe alluded to the possibility of two trades, and perhaps one doesn't involve, well, I guess one would then not involve Robert Covington, and says that the Wolves have a bunch of expirings such as Jeff Teague and then rotation guys making small amounts of money. That includes Jake Layman, Noah Vonleh, Jordan Bell, Trevion Graham, and Shabazz Napier. All those guys are rotation-worthy guys on a playoff contender. Of course, saying that, it then sounds ridiculous that the Wolves would trade them. Why not keep them with it with a superstar in Karl-Anthony Towns and try and make the playoffs yourself? I guess the answer is if Rosas thinks he can either gain significant assets in draft pick capital or and or another young star, there is no reason to make a move. So I'm not sure. I do think that Rosas is going to be looking, and if he finds a big move, he will pull the trigger. But I don't know that he's going to be making multiple trades this year. I think that he is going to want to be a big player in the summer and probably thinks he's got a roster right now that could potentially contend for a 7 or 8 seed in the West. And if he truly thinks that, it doesn't make sense to get a little trigger happy and make some of these roster shuffling moves at this point in time. Lowe also mentions that the Wolves will likely try and become a third wheel in another trade because of some of their more movable contracts and some of their expirings. And remember, we're talking about expirings in a year. Gorgui Dieng's contract can be on that list of potential trade assets as an expiring contract. So that's definitely something that we can be talking about here, I guess, even as soon as next summer. So thanks to Zach Lowe for keeping our trade hopes alive here as we enter the part of the season where there isn't as much talk about trades and potential transactions, at least until we get past Thanksgiving. All right. Well, next up for the Timberwolves, of course, after the Charlotte game on Friday night, they'll have Saturday off, travel back to the Twin Cities before they host the Miami Heat on Sunday at 6 o'clock. Jimmy Butler should be playing for the Miami Heat. He did not play in their opener on Wednesday due to personal reasons. So expect Butler to be in the lineup on Sunday, although we, of course, don't know for sure yet. So we will have an episode this weekend to talk about the Hornets game and then also previewing the Miami tilt on Sunday. And then our Monday morning podcast will be a recap of the Heat game on Sunday night. And hopefully we'll be talking about a 3-0 Wolves team on Monday morning. That's all we have for today's episode of the Locked On Wolves podcast. Thank you for listening once again to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.